You are listening to the Pulse, Rod Murray's e-learning tech podcast, number 118.
But I still have firecrackers from the 4th of July. Come on, do I really need 6 months to shop? Might as well be Christmas nonstop. Pretty soon they'll be hanging up lights all over town. And it was just last week I finally took mine down. Please, can I get a break for my sake? All I'm asking for is 1 month without a fruitcake. Give me some time to recover from another year of drunken relatives and a pissed off little brother. Singing that stupid Jingle Bell song in the middle of July somehow seems wrong. I still got 5 months to go.
Hi, this is Rod Murray. Glad to be back. Well, it's that time of year again. That was a clip from The Christmas Season by Devo Spice. He's a comedy rapper from New Jersey who has become one of the most popular artists on the nationally syndicated Dr. Demento show. I think you'll enjoy it. I'll play the full song at the end of my podcast.
It's Christmas time again.
This podcast is sponsored by Inside Higher Ed, the online source for news, opinion, and jobs for all of higher education. As always, I'll post the links to all that we discuss on my show notes at www.rodspulsepodcast.com.
It's Christmas time again.
Now for my main topic today, I interviewed Dr. Matthew Stolzfus. He's a chemistry lecturer and faculty fellow at the Digital First Initiative at Ohio State University. He's one of the first at OSU to produce a course on iTunes U, a MOOC of sorts on, in this case, general chemistry. And amazingly, over 100,000 iTunes U students were enrolled in the very first year it was offered. So it's drawn quite a lot of attention, and now there are quite a number of courses from Ohio State on iTunes U. Now, naturally, here at U Sciences, we are also building MOOCs that we'll talk about in the near future using iTunes U. So I was very interested in Dr. Fuss's, as he calls himself, Dr. Fuss's experience with iTunes U. So we talked about Khan Academy and the similarities, the technology it was used, how he uses the videos in his flipped classroom, how faculty are incentivized to produce MOOCs, and all in all, what was the effort in producing a video MOOC such as this. So I hope you enjoy my interview with Dr. Matthew Stolzfus. Dr. Stolzfus, or if I can call you Fuss, as you mentioned, welcome to my podcast. Thanks for taking some time to talk to me and my audience today. Why don't you give my audience a little bit of background of what you do at OSU?
Sure. Currently, I serve as a chemistry lecturer. About 3 years ago, I started to put material together to flip my classroom, and I typically teach in a flip setting or more of a hybrid model. And I put a collection of videos together online. There's over 300 of them in total, and you can find them in a variety of different places, including a website that I have, and I've also set up an iTunes U course. So not only my students, but people from all over the world can access all the general chemistry content.
Very good. So sort of a Khan Academy for chemistry?
That's right. That's right. And when I first started with the flipped classroom, I had looked into the Khan Academy videos. And I think what he has up for chemistry is great for a high school level. But we go a little bit deeper in our general chemistry class here at Ohio State. So I kind of looked around and saw what was out there. And just decided to go with making my own set of videos and putting a course together. So it's a very similar setup to what Sal Khan does at the Khan Academy. I would just say that it's at a little bit more rigorous of an academic level.
Sure. What just for the technologists that are listening, what is your setup? How do you record your lectures?
So I used a product called Paper Show by a company called Canson. And it's essentially you have a dot matrix paper with an infrared sensor, and I write just like I would with a pen. And then I used Camtasia to screen capture all the videos and did, you can do a little bit of like a post-production where I added like an intro slide and a closing slide. So that's kind of how I did, you know, my setup. And the first set of videos I did for the last 10 weeks of the course were actually recorded while I was giving the lecture in the actual classroom. And then as I kind of progressed over the summer, I put the first two courses together. I just recorded them there at my desk and then posted them up to the web when it was done.
Of course, now I was directed to reach out to you by our Apple rep because I'm very interested in iTunes U and how we can leverage that as a platform. And I was amazed to find out that you had more than 100,000 students taking, I guess, one or more of your iTunes U lectures, videos. Is that true?
Yeah. So when a student or anyone downloads the course either on their, you know, iPhone or their iPad, we get enrollment numbers. And they're currently, I checked last week, there were over 127,000 people from all over the world that have this course on their device. So we're starting to get a little bit more statistics about which videos are watched and which ones are the most popular. And yeah, it's really neat because I get emails from all over the world from students that are thanking me for putting the course online and making it available.
That's great. When exactly did you start doing this?
At Ohio State, we have something called, we started something called the Digital First Initiative. And it's been about a year and a half. And we've kind of started working with Apple to get our students more prepared for the digital world that they're going to have to go into when they leave college. And, you know, we started some initiatives to try to get technology into the hands of our students. But one of the things that you have to make sure you consider is that if we want all of our students to use devices in class, the infrastructure and the internet has to be really, really good. And we started this Digital First Initiative, and the first step was to take the large lecture halls and make sure that everything network-wise is equipped so a student could bring one or more devices to class. That's kind of where the Digital First Initiative got started. And then we started kind of working with Apple to see how we could get our iTunes U library up and running. And my course was the very first one to be thrown up on iTunes U at Ohio State. And it was in May of, I guess it was May of 2012 is when we put it up and launched it and started our Digital First Initiative. It's been really, really neat to see how all this has happened in just such a short time, too.
I looked at the site, of course, in iTunes U, and I was amazed at all the courses that you have up there. Are most of them, like yours, linked to a specific textbook, and do most of them use your same technology of using the pen recording?
I think that you find a lot of variance from instructor to instructor, and just even in a traditional teaching model, about how much instructors will emphasize a textbook. And so what I tried to do, and you know, most general chemistry textbooks are similar in the way that the content covered. I know that from textbook to textbook, you have a little bit of variance, but they still cover the same topics. So I thought I wanted to stick with the topics that my students, you know, need. And not only for chemistry students, but if you're going into any kind of pre-professional fields, like a medical field, a dental field, and stuff like that, they have those courses that they need to take and the content that they need to get. So I aligned it a lot with the textbook. What we're starting to find here at Ohio State is we have some instructors that are starting to write their own content in iBooks Author. So the trailblazers are the ones that are kind of linking their content together with that. And I think it also depends a lot on the field that you're in as well. Because if you're in a humanities field, there isn't as much of an emphasis on doing homework problems. You know, if you're in math or chemistry or physics, it's you go through the problems. You need to make sure that there's a good system in place for that. And so it varies on the discipline, but we're seeing some instructors kind of write their own textbooks to go along with the course. And then you're seeing others like myself rely on a textbook that's there to kind of send the students back to.
I know OSU is pretty big. I don't know if you have 100,000 students or not, but what percent of your students do you think are coming from your own institution?
I really think that the iTunes U courses that are available, the optimal viewing is to use an iPad to use them, especially how I set my notes up. So I started collecting statistics on how many students came in with iPads. And in the fall of 2012, about 9% of my students had iPads. And then in the fall of 2013, I believe it was 21% of my students had iPads. When I teach my classes, I teach usually two class sections, and I have 300 students each in each classroom. I don't think all of my students are utilizing the iTunes U aspect of it, but those who have iPads are definitely subscribing.
I'm not sure how iTunes U works, so you don't get, you know, analytics about, you know, what institution they're coming from. Is that right?
That's correct.
What you're doing is called a MOOC. How did that idea fly with your faculty at your institution that you're sort of, you know, giving away free content?
I think that faculty on a campus, especially as large as Ohio State, we have a very diverse set of faculty, and they have a very diverse set of opinions as well. You know, initially it was, well, will it take away from the traditional classroom experience? And my argument has always been that I want to try to prepare my students the best and help develop their problem-solving skills. And the best way to help develop those problem-solving skills is to teach them how to solve really hard problems that are really challenging. And what I think is that putting the videos online allows me to do that in my classroom. Some faculty, I don't think, are really thrilled that there are videos out there. But if students aren't watching my videos, they're going to watch someone else's videos. And they're going to YouTube a lot for additional help. So I think if we can kind of work together and kind of help other instructors to see that these videos right here are assisting them in educating their students, because I also think it's great to get two different perspectives, right? And you know, not everyone learns in the same way. So if you can have different perspectives and different ways, I'm not going to explain all the chemistry concepts in the exact same way as the other faculty do. So sometimes it's nice to get a different perspective. So, but I will say that the instructors are all over the map in terms of how much they appreciate having video content available.
From the administrative point of view, if I was a school that was interested in using iTunes U, did you have a feel for how much it costs the university in terms of manpower? Or is this something that I know Apple doesn't charge per se for putting content up there, but there's certainly an investment in planning and maybe help from instructional designers or other technologists to make it all happen. Do you have any thing to contribute there in terms of what do you think it costs and whether there's a good return on investment? Was this a series of courses looked at as a way to market the university, for example?
So I think that every university right now is kind of trying to kind of figure out the answers to these questions. I think that there needs to be some type of return on investment as an incentive to get universities to continue with the online development. I think that in terms of the cost that it cost me to put my course up there and what it cost the university, it really didn't cost them that much, right? Because I can do that as a lecturer. I have the summers off. So it's like I can kind of do my own thing over the summer. And I kind of did most of this on my own. And the partnership with Apple is not really costing anything to the university. I think what Apple wants to see is they want to see good content, and they're going to promote good content. And if you go into the iTunes U library, they promote a variety of different schools' content that's out there. How do you quantify that return of investment in terms of maybe like admissions? Or I don't know how they would quantify any of that. But I think from a marketing standpoint, it's really nice to see the branding out there in the iTunes U library. My course, I was kind of one of the like trailblazers that kind of first tried this out and everything like that. And so I had the content up there. But what we're doing now is we started a new office here at the university called the Office of Distance Education and E-Learning. What you would hope is that if you help one faculty member kind of put courses together and help them develop content, then they can kind of, you know, share their expertise with their colleagues. We started doing what we would call iTunes U boot camps, right, where we just go away for a day or a weekend and just do work to get the course done. because I think every faculty at pretty much every university are busy people. So how can you get them away from campus, isolate them, and have all the content ready and just put all of that up there and then use the resources and get that course published so we have it up there in our library? Again, I can't quantify the return on investment, but from a marketing standpoint, I think that everything is going really well for Ohio State in this regard.
Does the university incentivize faculty in any way? Now, it sounds like you did this pretty much on your own, but I'm curious if they've decided to give incentives to faculty for this.
That's the million-dollar question, right? And then if you give incentives, how do you give them, and then what budget does it come out of? Because I find that the biggest thing that faculty want, if they're going to develop some type of online course, is they want like course release time to put it together. When you try to put a course together while you're teaching, it really wears on you. There's different ways to incentivize everything. You know what I mean? Like so, and different departments take different avenues in order to do that. I would think, though, that the best incentive you can give for a faculty member to put their content up there is kind of like the release time and the resources. It could be undergrad students working for you to cut the video, right? But I think a lot of folks underestimate the video editing time that it really takes to put all these together. So yeah, I think there's a bunch of different ways that you can incentivize this work. You know, there are naysayers out there, but the best thing I think you can do for an instructor is give support all the way up through the administration. And when the upper administration has your back, you're willing to go out and take more risks and innovate a little bit more. And that's something that I was very fortunate to have here at Ohio State, is that we're starting to push forward and we want to be one of the leaders and a university that's one of the innovators with producing excellent online content.
Do you know if the university put anything towards marketing? Having 100,000 students come to just one course in probably less than a year is pretty amazing. Do you know if there was any marketing effort put into this?
I don't know if there was a particular dollar amount. There was a, digital first initiative, but that digital first initiative had a certain budget and they have certain, course designers, and they have a staff that works over there. And like, that was kind of part of one person's job, is to kind of market this a little bit and do everything like that. So I don't think they set aside a lump sum to say, hey, we're going to market this. But I will say, from looking at the numbers, the biggest thing that really helped with from a marketing perspective is when Apple features you in the Apple Education Spotlight. It was funny because one of the guys that manages iTunes U, he's like, hey, do you know what happened on like June 12th, right? Because we saw like a huge jump, right? And that was from being featured in the Apple Education Spotlight. And it's all of a sudden you get like 15,000 downloads in a day because of something like that. The first day that the course went live, our university president at the time, Gordon Gee, has Twitter, and he tweeted that out. And that really helps the traffic and everything like that. So Ohio State has an excellent, excellent marketing department here. And I think they're utilizing different strategies. And it's like, hey, what's the marketing budget? I don't think it costs anything for any university president to have a Twitter account, right? But it does take some time and effort to build up 50,000 followers. So when you tweet that out, people are going to start noticing and start paying attention.
In terms of the nuts and bolts, you mentioned the editing, video editing, and actually managing the uploading process, because I know from experience, and because we are starting to develop some iTunes U courses, that it's not trivial. Does this Digital First Initiative, does that office take care of that, or is it up to the faculty? How does that work?
When I put everything together, I worked with an undergrad, and I'm very, very fortunate to have his name's Eric Langendurfer. Really, really fortunate to have Durf working for me. He was a chemistry major, but took a film documentary class where they had to create their own film. And he says, look, I'm going to medical school. There's a lot of resources around campus. I want to learn how to use Final Cut and iMovie. Is there a project that you have that we could work on together? And that's where it all started for me, which was really great, because everything started from an undergraduate side. I mean, I had been thinking about it and I wanted to produce that, but I really didn't have much experience. And Camtasia is pretty easy and straightforward to use. So we put all that together. It was just the cutting of the videos when I would record a 48-minute lecture because I didn't want to put a 45-minute video online. I don't think it would have gotten as many views. So he helped cut that up and splice it up and use the resources here that we have in our digital unions and everything like that to get everything done. Now, as we're going forward, we can have the ODEE office has a grant program where you can apply for what we call impact grants. So in that impact grant, you can use that for time for the staff there at Ohio State to work through. So there is assistance and stuff like that to help you get started. I've worked with various departments and stuff like that to help them get started and say, hey, come up with a plan. And then usually the department then itself funds the resources of either hiring an undergrad and paying them to do that. So there's a bunch of different avenues, and it all depends on how much the departments have in their budget.
You mentioned at the outset that you were starting to flip the classroom using these videos. So sometimes they have lecture capture and they know how to do recordings like yours, but what kind of activities do you do in the class that normally would have been, you know, homework? What is getting flipped?
Right. So I use a program called Learning Catalytics, and I think it's very important for students to learn skills and to interact with their classmates and collaborate with them. So I think collaboration is a big key, a big skill that students should have when they graduate. So there's this program called Learning Catalytics. It was developed by a guy named Eric Mazur at Harvard. He teaches physics there. And what it does is the students come into the large lecture hall. They pick where they're sitting that particular day. It asks them what their seat is. And I deliver a question. And they answer that question on their own individually. And I give them about 2 or 3 minutes. And then I click a button that says assign groups. And it assigns groups to the students. And they can interact and discuss what their answer might be. It doesn't tell them the right or wrong answer. It just lets them know what answer their classmates had. And then they can have a discussion based on that. And I think that's extremely effective in a lot of ways, right? I can get immediate feedback of how my students are performing right away. And then it allows them to discuss a bit with their classmates. And it's just completely changed the culture of the classroom. And it changes it into an interactive atmosphere. And it's been absolutely fantastic.
Well, that's great. I'm very familiar with Eric Mazur. In fact, I heard him talk and he was using Learning Catalytics. So I'd like to get him on my program at some point. Again, thank you so much, Foos, if I can call you that.
Yeah.
I appreciate the time, and certainly good luck with your continued use of iTunes U. You know, part of you must be saying, well, gee, maybe if I just charge the students $1 a course, I'd be doing pretty well
right now. No, it's good. It's great. And I mean, when I got started, I was hoping that some high school teachers would take a look at the content and use it in their class to better prepare our college freshmen. So if there's any high school teachers out there, please shoot me an email. I'd be happy to share anything I have with you guys.
That's good information. I hope they do. Thank you again.
All right. Thanks so much. Appreciate you having me on.
I hope you enjoyed hearing about building a MOOC on iTunes U. So stay tuned for the song, the Christmas season, and I certainly hope you have a great holiday season. See you in 2014. Bye for now.
Christmas is coming, now Christmas is coming. Christmas is coming, now Christmas is coming. Christmas is coming, now Christmas is coming. Ah, Christmas is coming, ah, Christmas is coming.
It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas already, with the animated reindeer in the top hat wearing Yeti. Now I can be as festive as the next guy, but I still have firecrackers from the 4th of July. Come on, do I really need 6 months to shop? Might as well be Christmas nonstop. Pretty soon they'll be hanging up lights all over town, and it was just last week I finally took mine down. Please, can I get a break for my sake? All I'm asking for is 1 month without a fruitcake. Give me some time to recover from another year of drunken relatives and a pissed off little brother. Singing that stupid Jingle Bell song in the middle of July somehow seems wrong. I still got 5 months to go, and I'm already sick of the ho, ho, ho.
It's Christmas time again.
Let's see what's on TV.
It's Christmas time again.
Well, we got Rudolph, Frosty.
It's Christmas time again.
Rudolph versus Frosty.
It's Christmas time again.
A CSI Christmas.
The Christmas season causes great frustration, getting longer and harder like a Viagra patient. I just need a vacation from the holiday cheer. I don't think that I can take it for the rest of the year. And nobody is cheerful anyway. It's always give me the damn toys and get the fuck out my way. I can deal with that on December 23rd, but when it starts up in March, that's a little absurd. And then the charities, there's way too many begging me for money like I have any. And there's some idiot flapping his mouth like a flapjack with his peace on earth and all that crap. I'd settle for peace in the kitchen, but that would mean my relatives would have to quit their bitching. And since I doubt that'll ever come about, it's Merry Christmas, pass the gravy, and I try to tune them out.
It's Christmas time again.
Let's see what Santa brought for me.
It's Christmas time again.
Huh, I already have one of these.
It's Christmas time again.
Hey, wait a minute. This is mine.
It's Christmas time again.
I've been looking for this.
Christmas usually consists of this: fighting back the urge to shop with my fist, sending out cards to people I never see, and trying to keep the dog from peeing on the tree. And then the whole family has to search for directions so we can find our way to church. I still find it ironic and a little bit odd that my kids believe in Santa Claus but not in God. But I ain't taking my kids, cause it's too weird to see some child molester in a fake beard. I don't care if they kick and scream, I ain't doing anything till after Halloween. I can only buy damaged and discount due to the amount in my bank account. But I have no motivation to shop when I know I'm still paying off gifts from 3 Christmases ago.
It's Christmas time again.
And again, and again, and again, and again.
It's Christmas time again.
And again, and again, and again, and again.
It's Christmas time again.
And again, and again, and again, and again.
It's Christmas time again.
What do you mean again? More like still.
That's it for today's episode. Thank you very much for listening. Don't forget to give Rod feedback. You can leave comments on his blog, send email to rod@rodspulsepodcast.com, or leave audio feedback on his comment line at 610-616-2199. The preceding audio commentary is the product of the author, Dr. Rodney Murray, and does not represent the official viewpoint of the University of the Sciences or any other institution or company.